their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. It is good to be back. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing well. Just been doing a little bit of post-processing on images from the sand dunes trip that we talked about previously.
Oh, yeah.
Done with those, I think. I'm happy with them. Got some shots I liked.
Yeah, that was cool. You know, it's funny. I didn't bring my laptop when we went out there. I brought my iPad Pro and downloaded everything into it, which is great. You can go right into Lightroom now. And I did a lot of just post-processing with the iPad. I finished them off on the computer, obviously, because there's more features. But that was kind of cool. It worked out. Today, we're mostly going to discuss, I mean, we had mentioned a few, let's get a few things caught up. We had mentioned a few things from last week, talking about infrared and the 24 to 200 and some other things. So I just was going to mention that I posted on my website at luminescentphoto.com my 24 to 200 review. As well as a YouTube video. I've got a YouTube channel out there too with a video where I go through and do some side-by-side comparisons and Lightroom just zooming in on the images, you know, just looking at the edge sharpness, and everything that we had talked about remains true. But it's out there and posted. I think I put a link to it on our Facebook page, but I can't remember. And then just earlier this week, I posted a entry as well, again with another video on the banding removal technique that we were talking about using Photoshop. So that's out there now on both my website and on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. So for people, you know, and I think, you know, we never talked about it. I think it would be applicable to all images, but realistically, I've never seen the banding problem outside of my infrared. So it's
I haven't either.
It's the kind of thing that you can't really worry too hard about. I mean, I've certainly never seen it with the visible images, the color images. So that's out there. But we're going to follow up with some of the announcements because Canon had announced a few things that we didn't get to last time. We just want to mention those. And then there's some new Nikon announcements, right?
So yeah, and last time, just with the timing, we barely had any time to look at the Canon announcement. It was, you know, like a matter of minutes. So it was a little bit incomplete. And there were some interesting things, I think. And one of the concepts there we'll talk more about, you know, is a trend that's going on and showing up not just with Canon, but with Nikon and other brands. We'll leave that as a teaser and then talk about it when we get into it. So just reviewing the Canon announcements, because they did have a nice set of things.
Right. Well, the cameras we mentioned right up front earlier.
Yeah, and
R5 and R6, and they look very good.
Yeah. The only thing I would add beyond what I said last time is they look like really nice cameras. I mean, the R5 has crazy video, video that I don't really need, but both of them look like really solid cameras. So if someone is a current Canon owner, those make a lot of sense because the current Canon lenses will adapt very, very nicely to those, you know, better than going on any other brand. So they look good. It's good for there to be competition out there, my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
But they did come out with some interesting lenses.
Yeah. Let's talk about those because there's several lenses, and they're telephoto lenses, and they're big telephoto lenses, but they're small telephoto big lenses, right? I mean, and this is part of that interesting thing that we're looking. So they announced three telephotos, a 100 to 500, 4.5 to 7.1 with stabilized USM, you know, the ultrasonic motor And then, and that looks, that's cool. That hopefully that is going to compete well with something like the Nikon 200 to 500. In fact, mm-hmm. I think it's probably, because of the aperture, it's probably actually smaller. Yeah, it's 3 pounds instead of five. The Nikon 200 to 500 is really a beast. But it's also kind of expensive. It lists, I'm looking at the pricing on B&H and it's $2,700 US. That's not cheap. So
no, whereas the Nikon one you were talking about is just an absolute steal.
Yeah, it really is.
Very fine lens. Mm-hmm.
It's just, you have to be able to handle the size of it.
Right.
They announced an 85 F2 macro stabilized. Mm-hmm. That's cool. And that's moderately priced.
And then there's these make a nice portrait lens.
Probably. Oh yeah. I bet
it would. In addition to a macro.
And then we've got these two super telephotos, a 800 and a 600. And
they're both image stabilized.
They're image stabilized.
But then the real twists are they're F11 lenses in both cases, and only F11 lenses. You can't even stop them down.
They literally only go to 11, Rick.
Yes.
This is like, how cool is that? But yeah, they're fixed aperture lenses.
Right. Now, and they collapse.
They shrink the size down. Wow. And these use the Canon's diffractive optics, the DO system, which mm-hmm. is similar to Nikon's phase Fresnel technology, I think, but not identical, but it's the same concept.
Right.
It gets weight down. These are small lenses and they're priced ridiculously affordable. The 600 is $700. The 800 is $900.
Yeah.
But in the past, you would have looked at, well, I guess looking back, going back through time, I remember mirror lenses being this way, you know, an F8 or an F11 right. mirror lens with all of the challenges associated with them. I remember putting the mirror, my dad had the 500 F8, I think, and I remember putting it on a camera body and not being able to see anything through the viewfinder. It was just black.
Because it was so dark, yeah.
It was so dark.
A long time ago, I owned a Nikon 500 millimeter F8 mirror lens. And then before that, you know, long, long time ago now, I had a little bitty Tamron 500 millimeter F8 mirror lens. And those are kind of love-hate relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're nice and compact, but like you said, looking through them was dark as heck in a
especially manual
SLR camera. Plus the out of focus areas, you know, got the rings and stuff, which,
yes.
you know, for most shots, I don't want to see, you know.
Right. Go back through the old Sports Illustrated archives for daytime baseball games and you will see ring bokeh,
yeah.
you know, the donut shaped out of focus yeah. highlights. And it's interesting. And it's a telltale sign they used a reflex lens. But these are wait a minute. So what if mm-hmm. if we're saying all this here, like why would you want an F11 lens? Because everything we've always talked about with respect to longer glass has always been, well, you know, you need the faster apertures for all of those reasons, autofocusing, seeing the image through the viewfinder. All of a sudden we've got these and, you know, obviously they're priced incredibly affordably.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who knows what they'll do, but, and theoretically you can even use them with the new Canon, teleconverters, their extenders 1.4 and 2x,
which is really crazy.
So now you're like, yeah, think about it. If you put a 2x extender on an F11 lens, you're at F22,
right?
But how is this even usable, right? That's the interesting question.
Well, and of course the key thing is they're taking advantage of mirrorless technology, and just like we've talked about, you can autofocus at much smaller apertures than you ever could on a DSLR. It just works very differently. So that's viable. The viewfinder image is not dark and dingy anymore when you're using a slow aperture lens. It looks just normal. So, you know, you gain back size and weight and a low cost. The thing that you're going to lack, and for some kinds of shooting, it's important, is subject isolation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes with wildlife shots, that can just be incredibly important, you know, eliminate the busy background. But not everything is that way. So, you know, if someone is trying to get shots that are more like a, they just want to have a record of seeing a nice moose, and it's still a pretty shot, for the right kind of background situation, it could be very pleasant and you're saving a lot of money. And right. I've also heard the idea that, you know, maybe they're intended a little bit more for video use, and that could certainly be interesting. I think they're potentially clever. It'll be interesting to see what happens and if similar lenses show up in other brands.
Right. And this is this trend that we're seeing. Before we go into that, let me just mm-hmm. also throw in my two cents, which is, you know, an 800 is more like, you know, you're taking pictures of small things far away most mm-hmm. of the time. But with an F11, and mirrorless aside, you're probably not getting the lightning fast autofocus tracking that you would get with a faster lens. I'm saying that in a speculative manner because I don't know what kind of special sauce Canon puts right. into their autofocus. Maybe it's amazing. But with an F11 lens, let's say a 600 F11, you're thinking to yourself, hey, wait a minute, I can get a 600. I can go shoot my kid's high school football game, okay? Or and I'll say football, both definitions of football, mm-hmm. right? American or otherwise. You're not going to take a 600 millimeter F11 into a night game, you know, a dark stadium and use this. It's just not going to function because you will not have enough ISO to freeze the action. So these are daytime kind of lenses, outdoor, daytime, whether it's wildlife or whatever else that you're doing, some kind of daytime sports, possibly, you know, whatever it might be. So the fact that they're the slower aperture does have an impact on your ability to capture cleaner images with faster shutter speeds.
Yes.
So let's not rule that out, but it is pretty wild. And we're mm-hmm. seeing sort of the same trend from Nikon, right? I mean, we've seen that. So we have, you know, Nikon was very reluctant to produce lenses, even their variable aperture designs. Rarely did they, well, pretty much never went above f5.6. That was a big discriminator between some of the third-party zooms, like the Sigmas, the Tamrons. They would go to 6.3, and they've mm-hmm. been doing that for years. And smaller design, right? It's a little smaller, lighter design. Why did Nikon stick with 5.6? Because their DSLRs were, at the time, their focusing system wasn't really capable of focusing well at smaller apertures.
Yeah, it was a little bit erratic.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it, but it wasn't always predictable. And so I think they erred on the side of, as long as we stay at 5.6, we're good. But we're seeing that now, the 500 PF, which is a 5.6. But the Z lens that we just mentioned, the 24 to 200, is a F4 to 6.3 design. We're seeing that more. And I think it's because the mirrorless cameras can handle it, and it's not a problem anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's worth it for the size trade-offs. The smaller size is worth that because you're not paying the penalty on your autofocus system with a mirrorless camera in the same way you would with a DSLR, the dimmer viewfinders, it just seems to work.
Yeah, and we've talked about the little Z50 kit that I have, you know, where it's got the standard lens, it's a 16 to 50 DX lens. It's a 6.3 at the long end. Mm-hmm. And gosh, it's very pleasant to shoot with as long as you don't need tons of subject isolation where you're not trying to shoot in low light and keep the ISO down. It works really well, and it's just tiny and it's lightweight and great little lens.
And what I think we're both seeing is that the newer designs coming out of Nikon are sharp, or pretty darn sharp, wide open, even in
Absolutely.
The corners with the new Z, because the Z mount allows for that, you know, a bigger lens mount design that allows mm-hmm. for them to do some stuff with the optics. So, you know, it used to be and we said it before, you always want to stop down a little bit. And so unless you have a lens that performs well wide open, you were always finding yourself stopping down. And so you say, oh gosh, it's a 6.3 lens and now I'm stopping down to f8 or f11, you know, just to get a sharp shot. If you can shoot wide open and get a sharp shot, which is what we are both seeing with these Z lenses, then it removes some of that hesitation on purchasing them.
Right.
Because you can just go wide open. So that's kind of cool. So speaking of that, you know, there's another new Nikon lens, but it comes out with a new camera. So let's talk about the camera first, right?
Okay.
And this was just announced earlier this week, the Nikon Z5. Tell us about it. What is it?
Well, just to preface stuff, it's interesting because we were talking yesterday about these, and we kind of approached them from different angles, both of which are valid, but it was just interesting that we approached them differently. So it's, in one way of describing it, is it's a slightly stripped down Z6 in a way. It's still 24 megapixels. It has the same nice viewfinder in it. I mean, the Nikon Z viewfinders are very, very nice.
It's a full frame, 24 megapixel FX camera. So there we go.
But it does have some differences. It, you know, it has a lower res LCD display on the back. Not a huge deal, but, you know, higher res is nicer. It doesn't have the LCD panel on the top. You know, I can go either way. I kind of like having one up there, but I can survive with the one on the back. But it does have two card slots, both SD cards.
Yes.
So, you know, neither one of us is, you know, cares that much about two cards, but it's certainly not a bad thing.
Well, and there's some people when that makes a huge importance.
Yeah, it's very big to some people. And also, if you're coming from cameras that currently use SD cards, you can keep using those and avoid having to go purchase XQD cards or CF Express cards, you know, now for those. So, and those aren't all that cheap. But it still has the in-body image stabilization like on the Z6 and Z7. And
it's about the same size.
It's almost identical in size.
Practically identical size. So no differences in terms of size or weight or anything like that.
If you're into 4K video, the Z6 is better because the Z5 will shoot it, you know, at somewhat lower frame rates. It won't go quite as high as the Z6 will. But it's, if I remember right, a 1.7 crop.
Okay.
Whereas the Z6 gives you the full image. And that's nice, especially if you're shooting at wider angles and stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then the frame rate is different, right? That's the bigger. The Z6 can shoot like up to 12 frames per second. This one's going to shoot at 4.5 frames per second. So so then the bigger thing and the elephant in the room is that it's priced a lot lower. This you know, and it's not available yet. It's available for pre-order when I looked out on the usual sites. It's for just under $1,400 US without a lens. And you can get it with a kit lens, which we'll talk about in a minute, a 24 to 50 that adds a couple hundred dollars to the price. So it comes into just under 1700 US. So for the price right now of a Z6 body only, and that's and mind you, the Z6 is being sold at a discount. It originally came out at just under $2,000. So it's discounted right now, but at the price of for the price of a Z6, you could buy a Z5 with a lens.
Yeah.
Which is appealing to some people. So it's funny because, you know, I browse around and I try not to get too crazy down the rabbit holes with the, you know, various discussion boards, but you see what people are talking about. And it's kind of like, and this goes back to our conversation the other day, which is, how do you view this? And I think how you view this camera really depends on what are you currently shooting with and what is your budget, you know, because there's one school of thought that says, well, when you put the specs side by side, the Z6 on paper is a, you know, better camera for the most part, in darn near every category for only a few hundred dollars more. So right. there's that point of view, which is valid, right? I mean, if you're an enthusiast and you're doing things in a you know, not necessarily a professional way, but you're really doing sports or act, you know, more where frame rate is important to you, and maybe the video is more important to you, then a Z6 is really a great deal. I mean, it's a great camera.
I would also say if you're using it as a backup body to a Z7, then you're able to share cards and stuff like that.
Right. Share accessories, that sort of thing.
The other way to look at it is more of a bottoms up. And if you're a little bit more financially limited and don't care a whole lot about video, and in my case, the total number of videos that I've shot with higher end cameras, you know, something other than a cell phone, is maybe 10. And I'm not talking about complete edited videos. I'm talking about video segments. So I'm counting things that are 20 seconds long. So clearly I don't care. So if you don't care about the video capabilities and you're okay with a slightly slower frame rate, and for me, most of the time, a slower one is fine, then why spend the extra money on a Z6?
And if you're looking for, if you're looking for a full frame, you know, a step, whether it's a step up or, you know, an upgrade or a side grade, you know, if you're coming from a camera that uses SD cards, you're looking for maybe a camera to take traveling, but you don't want a crop sensor, because, you know, you do have to look at this Z5 is slotting between, you know, what about the Z50, right? The Z50 is there. It's DX. It doesn't have in-body stabilization, but for $1,200, you get a two-lens kit. Z5 costs a little more.
Distinctly smaller and lighter.
Very much smaller, right? Yeah. So you've got that. But for some, you know, but if you're traveling overseas, especially, we can't do that right now. But if you ever run out of memory cards, you can always find an SD card somewhere. Like almost always. Whereas XQD, forget it. You better have those. SD cards, SD readers, all of that stuff is super easy to find, you know, when you're traveling. Yeah. So that's, and then having two slots is always a good thing. You know, there are people who just, that is an important feature and so that's good. And so it is interesting. And, you know, again, if, you know, I say only $300 more, but for that money, you get a lens as well. And that's a nice little walk around kit.
So we talk about the lens.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about that. So this is a 24 to 50, and it's variable aperture f4 to 6.3 again. So there's our 6.3 again. It's about a 2x zoom. And it's very small. It's only about, it extends out as you zoom it, but it's quite small. It's very light. It's only like 195 grams or something like that. It's really lightweight. So if you're looking for kind of just a walk around lens and you don't need the telephoto, could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think there's, let me put it this way. I'm not sure I would want that as my primary lens. You know, I wouldn't be as happy with it as I would be a 24 to 70 f4. There are things I would miss. However, as an option at times, you know, think about traveling, you know, which it's hard to do right now. Yeah. And you want to be able to go out with something that's really compact and light and might even fit in a jacket pocket. This could work. Mm-hmm. You know, you shut an L bracket and put this lens on a Z6 and or 7, and it's small and lightweight. And I've shot with 24-50 millimeter lenses, you know, long, long time ago. I remember I had one that I used with my F5 at times when I wanted something that got me down to 24 and was pretty compact. I used it for traveling. And so I can kind of envision it. It's interesting. And again, like with those Canon lenses we were talking about, I think it's nice to have the option.
And again, when you put it in the context of for someone who is coming from the bottom up, you don't have full frame glass yet. The difference in price is pretty significant. So again, you can have this as your starter thing. And you know what I like about it, what's weird is that the zoom range is really, really constrained. But it goes down to 24. And I think both of us, at least, really like being able to go to 24. If this was a 28 to something zoom, I'd probably think differently of it.
Same here. That's an important point.
I can 24 survive. Is truly wide.
Yeah, I can survive with 24 to 50. I get irritated if it's a 28 to 70, quite honestly, because it's just not wide enough at times for me. And I can always crop a little bit on the long end if I need to get a little bit narrower field of view. So, yeah,
and if you think about the average, street walk around photographer, they're often shooting in that range, 35, maybe 50. Sure, they might be using a faster lens, but when confronted with the $700-$900 price tag of the Z mount primes, hey, it's not a bad thing. So I have to say, when I first saw it, I was like, huh. And then as we talked through it, I can see it. And again, I can see it really as a compelling argument for someone who is moving up, either from a DSLR and they want a full frame and they just need to have a kit lens with this. It's going to be versatile for you. It should work. And if it behaves like we have seen with the other Z lenses, that it is sharp and decent wide open, well, the f6.3 thing becomes a light problem rather than a optical performance problem.
And we did look at the MTF data for this, which it's not everything about a lens, but it gives you a sense. And it looks like it's probably going to be sharp wide open.
Good. So that's really cool. So the other thing, we'll have to wait to see. Maybe we can get our hands on one. Who knows?
Yeah, that would be nice.
It won't be out for a while, but you can check out all the prices, and it's about the same no matter where you go. And then the last thing, which was kind of an interesting announcement that Nikon slid in here, was the announcement of two native Z mount teleconverters, 1.4 and 2x teleconverters. And it's an interesting thing because these are going to be designed. Right now, the only lens they will physically mount to would be the 70 to 200 2.8, which is as of yet not out. I've seen things where it should hopefully be out by the end of August, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I saw September too, so who knows?
Yeah, and it's funny that we bring this up because we talked about that lens when it was announced, and one of the reasons you have the F mount, which is an excellent lens optically. The FL.
That's what I mainly shot with at the sand dunes.
Yeah. And it was funny because you mentioned that one of the reasons you stuck with that lens rather than pre-ordering the 70 to 200 in the Z mount because they're about the same size. There's really you're not gaining any compactness with the Z. And you have teleconverters that you can use with the 70 to 200. So when you put and with a 2.8 lens, you can use either of these teleconverters, the 1.4, the 2X. And just as a reminder, you lose one stop of aperture with a 1.4 converter. You lose two stops of aperture with a 2X converter. So your 2.8 lens behaves either as an F4 or an F5.6, which is still really good in this circumstance. But it's nice to put a 1.4 converter on a 70 to 200 many times because then you're at around that 300 millimeter range and it makes that lens a little more versatile to just, you're not having to pack an extra 300 or something like that. And you put a 2X converter on it and now you have a 400 millimeter at the long end, which again is a useful focal length for, daytime sporting events and that kind of thing. So it's interesting they came out with these because I don't think either of us expected them.
I expected them at some point, but it was nice to see them come out sooner rather than later. It actually doesn't change my decision to stick with what I currently have because, one, it just works awfully well, even on the adapter. It's just not a problem. I mean, like I said, I was using it last week and it worked great and no complaints. The thing for me is I already have the teleconverters. I don't need to go out and buy new ones or sell my current ones at a loss. So I'm just going to stick with what I have, but it's nice that they came out with those. I'm sure the new 70 to 200 will be fantastic. It'll probably be just slightly better optically than mine, but not by a lot. Probably a little bit quicker autofocus performance, but in ways that I don't care about. So.
But you have some native converter options now, and those will probably do very well if they're also designed for this native mount. We've seen some, so right now that really is the only lens you could use it for. We'll talk about teleconverters maybe in an upcoming episode. But that's kind of all the time we have for today. We've blown through all these things, just all
Yeah.
this gear stuff. But we're
The only last thing I'll say, and this is really short, we're a bunch of Z camera firmware updates this
Oh,
week.
right. That's
So,
true. So
and the
go. Yeah.
Z50 in particular got a lot. It finally got the autofocus improvements that the Z6 and 7 got a while back. I think they were
Good.
slowed by coronavirus stuff probably. But if you own a Z50, certainly update the camera. Works, just like the others now, which is great.
If my sister is listening, update your Z50.
Yeah, you now have the animal eye focus and the
Oh, cool.
improved means of starting focus tracking and
Right.
all that kind of stuff.
And another interesting thing is that there's actually a firmware update for the FTZ mount adapter.
Yeah.
And if you install that firmware on it, and for our listeners who haven't done firmware, you need a card reader to do this. You download the firmware file from Nikon's website, you extract it, and you put it on a memory card, and you need to have a card reader to do this. You got to transfer it to, so you can't just plug your camera into the computer to do this. You need a card reader, you put it on a formatted card, you go into the firmware options, and you'll get an update menu. And when you click that update, depending on what firmware you've installed on the memory card, it'll say body or it'll say mount adapter or both if you have both of them in there. I did it with both. And the body update takes a couple minutes to process through. The FTZ update is done in seconds. It's maybe 10 or 15 seconds and it does its thing and it's very quick. And really all that does is allows you to update firmware on Nikon lenses that use the FTZ. So you can apply firmware updates from your Z body to your F mount lenses through that adapter. Is that correct? And that's really rare, but it's a thing.
And it turned out there was a firmware update for my 70 to 200 that I from a few months ago that I had not applied. So I
There you
went
go.
ahead and did that and it worked just fine.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, until next time, we would love to hear your thoughts on these cameras and lenses. If you're going to buy one, or maybe you pre-ordered one, let us know over on Facebook. It's facebook.com/imagedoctors. And we look forward to hearing from you and getting your feedback. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
All right, bye-bye.